Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the Live Issues program's post-episode recaps. On live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
Hey everybody, we're just about ready to start the show, but I've been thinking. No Borders, No Race just celebrated its 10th anniversary, and we celebrated it big with that top 100 album show. But I feel like we need something else to highlight the next chapter of this show. Something loud. Something edgy. Something reeking of badassery. Like the image of a bunch of bikers rolling down a highway while all hell breaks loose behind them. Perhaps, maybe, it's time for a new theme song. Yes, I think it's time we retire New Murder at the Old Chateau, the opening track from Louis XIV's 2003 debut album, which you can find on Amazon.com, and welcome in, with guns and fire blazing, a new theme song that you can find on Guitar Wolf's latest album, T-Rex, from A Tiny Space, Yuzhuan, also on Amazon.com. Because when you need to be the top BMF around, Guitar Wolf is always a go-to band for that perfect entrance music. So let's not waste any more time and get this show started. Mike's rolling, and cue the lightning.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your king, baby duck, Evan Borgo. Now, wasn't that a badass new theme song? Come on, you can't argue with Guitar Wolf. Badass is badass. Anyways, before I begin, a public service announcement for all you fighting game lovers out there, especially if you own a PlayStation 4. Forget about Street Fighter V. If you want a kick-ass fighting game, then I highly recommend disowning Chun-Li and Ryu and getting more familiar with the likes of Kyo Kusanagi and Alice in The King of Fighters 14. You can read my full review on it on the Electric Sisterhood site, but with the embargo finally lifted, I can shout my approval of SNK's latest chapter in its fighting series. 50 characters, some great and beautifully detailed stages, a nice arcade-styled story mode, and a butt-ton more. At launch! None of this waiting around that Capcom made you do with its legendary fighter, so please, do yourselves a favor and grab The King of Fighters 14 on PS4. So, while you sit around waiting for the game to either hit your doorstep or finish downloading, why don't we dive into this week's playlist? Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And today we're going to start things off with the latest single from Miwa, the complete opposite of that cool intro you just heard, but a fantastic artist nonetheless. Miwa has been heard in such anime series as Bleach and recently on the spring hit show Flying Witch. This song is called Princess.
Oh, to get around. I took as if I guess, which could only last the lowest of feeling, the lowest of feeling. Still down your heart, hey, I don't think which carries it on your back. Well, let's see, love is outside, okay, I know now since tomorrow, yeah. You hear me? It's the lowest of feeling, the lowest of feeling. Still down your heart, hey, I'll see which carries it on your back. Well, listen, love is outside, okay, I know now since tomorrow, yeah. You said to me to sell, cause she out there, the mountains overrated. Forget the world and feel your child in your own. It's now you kick to the child. Still down your heart, hey, other thing which carries on your back. Well, rest in love is outside, okay, I know now since tomorrow, oh yeah. You said to me to send the sea of bigger mountains of the rain.
Stooges with Traveling Circus from their Hang Loose album. Atomic Stooges were part of this past year's Japan Night Tour and are due to release their next mini album, Lady Luck, on September 21st.
Joining me on No Borders, No Race today is the founder and creative director of No, who in the past have published such games as Blast Them Bunnies, Rogue Singularity, and The Desperate Mile. On August 25th, they'll be bringing over a localized edition of the Japanese video game The Legend of Kusakari to the Nintendo 3DS. Please welcome, all the way from currently cold Sydney, Australia, Mr. Nick Watt.
Hi there. Thanks for getting me on the show.
No, anytime. I'm glad you are on this week's program. And yes, Sydney, Australia, as people don't know, when it's hot here in the Boston area, it's cold down in Australia.
Yep. We're in winter at the moment. We get like the opposite to you. So when you're in summer, we're in winter and so on.
Different hemispheres. It's such a crazy way science works. So before we talk about the game that you're going to be releasing soon, tell us a little bit about No. And you have to say No that way because that's how it's written.
So No was founded in 2006. I started working in video games about 1998 when I graduated university. Worked through various different companies and worked my way up to becoming a lead designer at Electronic Arts. Excuse me. And then my partner and I, who lived in the UK at the time, got the opportunity to move over to Australia. So I decided that that would be a good time, just as the Wii was launching and PlayStation 3 was coming out and Xbox 360 had just been out for a while. It looked like getting into doing self-publishing and making indie games might be a good way to go. So we started up No, and then since then we've developed quite a few games and software titles of our own, including our Pop, which was our first title, our really successful My Life Collected range, including our My Notebooks on Nintendo DSi. And then we've done an augmented reality game, Spirit Hunters, Escape Vector on WiiWare and then 3DS and PlayStation Vita, and then more recently Blast and Bunnies. And then we've also just started branching out into publishing. So a couple of the titles you just listed, Rogue Singularity and Desert Mile, they're in development at the moment by some other Australian developers, and we're helping publish their games on console for them. So if you take a look at our website, you can see we've got a whole bunch of games that are on sale, and then a whole bunch of cool titles by ourselves and by other developers that we're helping bring to different platforms.
That's fantastic. And you mentioned that you started this back in 2006, jumping from EA to doing your own thing. So I take it that you kind of were part of the whole big time to self-publishing before it became the cool thing for other people to do.
Yeah, that seems to be a way that a lot of our businesses work. So we, like Spirit Hunters, for example, is an augmented reality role-playing game on DSi. And it's you go around the world hunting for spirits in the real world and finding them and capturing them. And obviously we were a little bit too far ahead of the curve because Pokemon Go have done it to a much bigger success. So yeah, that seems to be our story a little bit. We're always a little bit ahead of the curve, unfortunately.
Now, for those who are unfamiliar with No, what would you recommend them? Let's say three games from your personal publishing or developing library. What would you recommend for them as like the prestigious titles that are under No's belt?
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I think if like our probably one of our best gameplay experiences and has been the best reviewed and won a lot of awards is our Escape Vector, and that was a WiiWare title, but it's also on 3DS as well. So you've got a 3DS, you actually got a lot more levels on the 3DS, much deeper story. So that's really good. And I think if you like augmented reality games and hunting stuff in the real world, I would definitely check out Spirit Hunters. It's one of the games I'm probably most proud of and one of the ones that we put the most development time and work in to try and get all the systems working. So it's like a full augmented reality RPG. So you choose an element when you start the game and then you go out and hunt different spirits and they have different strengths and weaknesses, and there's a whole bunch of different elements that have, you know, that's how the strength and weaknesses play off. And then, you know, either depending on your like arcadey titles, Blast and Bunnies would work really well, or if you want something a little bit more strategic, Cube Men 2, which we released on Wii U, is a really nice title as well. You can build your own levels in that, and then it's got a whole, it's kind of like a mobile movement-based tower defense game. So instead of your towers being static, they actually can move around the level, and they've got all different types and configurations. Blast and Bunnies is obviously a cute, cartoony arcade shooter. So just depends which one floats your boat, really.
No, those sound like excellent titles, and I'm sure many of my listeners will hopefully go out and give those games a whirl, be it via first a demo or even just buy the games in general, because I know some of my listeners have quite the money for buying plenty of video games.
Cool.
So let's dive into the game that we're talking about today, The Legend of Kusakari. So how did you first hear about Libridge and this game, and how did you know that it would be a great fit under the No name?
Yeah, so when we started looking at the publishing side of things, we wanted to help Australian developers get onto the console primarily, and then we started thinking about what other interesting avenues there might be. And there's a lot of really cool games and very quirky games that come out of Japan that never really managed to get to the West. So we really wanted to try and find some interesting and probably quirky titles as well from Japan and see if we could get them brought over. So what I did was I picked up a Japanese new 3DS and started downloading some of the games and the demos on the Japanese store and having a look at them. And I emailed a couple of different developers, and Liberage was one of them, and just said, look, we're a Western publisher, we really, really like the look of your game. It's really fun, it's really different, it's really quirky. Would you be interested in us helping you publish it in the West? And they replied, and they were really, really keen and really interested. So we took it from there.
That's fantastic. And the phrase that you use, the very quirky titles, and I've noticed, like, some of the best titles that Japan releases are, and specifically the most fun ones, are the most quirkiest. And they do kind of get unnoticed here in America. But I remembered a couple years ago when there was one title, and it kind of has that similar tone that Legend of Kusakari has. It was called Weapon Shop de Omase.
And
It had you building the weapons and selling them to, like, the RPG heroes that would go off on the actual adventures.
Yeah.
So, outside of Legend of Kusakari, I'm wondering if you could tell me about any of the other games that you came across that had this sort of quirky sort of vibe that really got your attention.
There's some nice titles that we looked at. There's a few who've actually popped up already on the eShop that other people have brought over from Japan. There's a really nice, it's very, very simple one. I think it was in quite high selling in Japan. I'm not actually sure what the... Let me see if I can open up my 3DS. You're this little cyclist, and you're going along, like, side on these levels, and it's just really mental. You're kind of jumping and platforming and doing all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff on your bike. I think there's been a couple of different sequels of that as well. And we also spoke to Arc System Works about doing the River City Ransom games, but unfortunately they'd already chosen a different publisher for that, which I think is a shame, because I think we'd have had quite a good success with them, those titles, I think, because they are the precursor to the Double Dragon series. That's what the Double Dragon series is kind of built around. And I would have loved to have brought all of them over to the West as well. And then the guys who did Cooking Mama, they had a really cool, quirky title. I'm not actually sure what the English name of it is, but you're basically a guy running a noodle shop, and you've got loads of customers coming in, and you've got to kind of get all the right ingredients and then stir up the noodles and then flick out the right bowls to the right customers. And I thought that was really nice. We actually spoke to them at E3 about publishing that in the West, but they wanted to try it themselves. So I'm not sure how that ended up going, whether anyone actually noticed it in the West or not, but that would have been a really cool title for us to publish as well. And then we spoke, and I mean, there's loads of really cool ones on the Japanese store. It's just the hardest part is, and understandably, because of the language barrier, like, Japanese people learn English at school, but probably not to the same level that, say, Europeans do.
Right.
And I certainly, and we, none of us learned Japanese at school, so my Japanese is appalling. So it's obviously building up that business relationship to begin with is hard. And then, much like people from the UK, Japanese can be quite conservative. And so they want to, the important thing for them is to build up a good relationship and a good foundation of trust for them to want to kind of do business with you going forward. So what we're hoping is by doing Legend of Kusakari, that other Japanese developers will see, look, these guys know what they're doing. They treated it with respect. They did a good job of it. And hopefully that way, as we contact other developers in the future from Japan, they might be a bit more open to us publishing them.
Well, fingers crossed that that's going to work, because that's the best way for you to gain the trust of all the, of, you know, foreign developers and foreign publishers. You know, that way you can show them, this is what we worked on overseas with this publisher here. So hopefully you'll be able to build up quite a very impressive library with other games that are very quirky that are within the Japanese realm.
Yeah, that would be cool. And I think going forward with things like the NX, if and when that's announced, I imagine there'll be a lot of Japanese titles, and that would be good to get in there early and start speaking to Japanese developers earlier on in the lifespan, so that we can start bringing some of those titles over during the early days rather than the late days.
That's totally a great idea. So let's talk about The Legend of Kusakari. So what is the story of The Legend of Kusakari? Describe to us the tale that's to be told within this game.
So the idea is, there's this horrible, nasty demon king, and he's basically trying to take over the world. And you are a youngish man who's very skilled in the ways of grass cutting. And you see that there's these brave heroes, and in particular one brave hero, who's going out and is going to try and take down this evil demon king. And so your thoughts are, well, do you know what? I want to make sure that all of our heroes have got a good place to battle on so that nothing's getting in their way and preventing them from, you know, saving the world and stopping this nasty evil demon boss. So you have to go out and clear each battlefield. So the game starts off quite simply. The very first level of the game, which I'm just loading up just now, is just a very simple kind of square arena. And it teaches you the basics. So you can move around, and then you can slash with your scythe, and then you cut the grass. And the quicker that you cut all of the grass in the level, the better the score you'll get. And then the other cool thing is, as you cut grass with the B button, your scythe starts to go up in rank. So as it goes up in rank, you can press the A button, and that'll do a really big slash. And the slash will be bigger depending on how high a rank your scythe's got to. And that way you can cut lots and lots of grass at the same time. And you can also use the shoulder buttons, hold them to run around and sprint around. If you get in the way of any of the monsters, or you bump into the heroes while they're fighting, or bump into a monster, you'll take damage. And because you are so excited about cutting grass, you live to cut grass. So if you stand still and aren't cutting grass, you'll start to lose health as well. And if you lose all your health, that will be level over.
So a man who literally lives to cut grass. So when I was first reading about this game, like, initially my thought was, so does this guy actually care about the fights that are happening, or is this just another day in the job? But yeah, from what you were describing, he does have this sort of, I need to make sure that the heroes succeed in this fight. And it's not just him just shrugging off, whoever wins, wins. I'm just here just to cut grass.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that the king of the land perhaps hasn't paid enough money to keep the whole land upkept very well, so it's a little bit untidy with all this grass and weeds everywhere, and this guy has taken it upon himself to decide, well, do you know what, if we're going to have all this fighting, we want to make sure that we tidy the place up a little bit and make sure that it's a nice place for people to fight and it's nice and safe and they don't get blinded by bits of grass stuck in their eyes.
Or perhaps the king tried to hire his brother, who wasn't that good, so now he's the trumpeter.
Yeah, I think that's the king's son. Yeah. So that's really interesting. So many people are like, oh, that music's terrible. And it's a deliberate... And it only actually plays at the start and the end of the level. It doesn't play during the level. It's deliberate. The whole quirky part of the... And I love it, because it's like so Japanese.
Right.
The whole quirky part of the music is there because... there's a little bit of a story in the fact that the king's son used his influence to get himself into the band, despite the fact that he's actually a really terrible trumpet player.
I love that sort of humor in Japan, because that's why I love, you know, the Japanese animation so much over there, because of that style of humor being very existent in it. And it's something that you don't really see much. I mean, you might see it a little bit here and there in the Western aspect of it, but it's very... front and center when it comes to Japanese humor.
Exactly. It's great, and I like, and that's what lends itself a little bit more character. It gives the game a little bit more personality. They've spent time thinking about each of the characters in the game and give them a bit of a backstory, and they don't have lots and lots of text exposition that necessarily tells you about all these facets. It's just, you can notice if you look at the king when you get to the end of the game, he's got a really big fat nose. And if you look at the trumpeter who's constantly playing, and he animates in a way that you can see that he's kind of out of time, he's got a really big fat nose. So you can kind of make that connection that, oh, maybe they're related and I wonder how that came about. So it's nice little, just little subtle things like that, I think is really clever.
Right. So throughout the game, you do cut grass, you try to make sure that everything's nice and tidy, but how does the gameplay evolve as you progress through the levels?
The main way it evolves is obviously the levels start to get a lot harder. You've got quite tight time constraints as you go through the levels, so if you run out of time, you'll it's game over. Well, the main time constraint obviously is the health. So your health is kind of always counting down, so that puts pressure on you to run from patch to patch. But it introduces some interesting mechanics where you've got these blue bits of grass, and when you cut them, that replenishes all of your health or a portion of your health, depending on the size of the clump. So then what you can do, like there's a level I'm just looking at the moment, where right at the centre at the start, there's a large number of these blue blades of grass, and then everywhere around the level there's lots of green grass. So you've kind of got to go a bit to and fro, go and cut a lot of green grass, and then make sure you come back in time to cut some of the blue grass, to replenish some of your health, and then you can carry on cutting. So a lot of it is just it starts to build on the skills and knowing when the best time to use your scythe are. So as you cut with the B button, you're only really able to cut one bit of grass, or if you just position yourself in between all four, you can kind of almost cut four bits of blades of grass at the same time. And then as that levels up, it's knowing where you want to use your powerful attacks. So you really want to try and get into the middle of a big clump of grass, and then you know, use your level 4 attack, and that'll take all of them out at once. So yeah, there's all these different nuances, but the main way it progresses is that the difficulty really starts to ramp up and it becomes much, much harder. And then visually it's nice, it kind of takes you on a visual journey through the kingdom. So you start where it's fairly lush and green, you end up in some caves, and there's a bit of castle you start exploring later on, and then you kind of, I think there's some marshes and things as well. So it's nice the way the terrain changes and keeps it kind of fresh and different as you play through the game.
Now, when I was watching the trailer and everything, what I like about it is that it does have that look of an action platformer sort of game, but at the same time, it's more of like a strategic puzzle game, because like you said, you have to keep on cutting grass, otherwise you start losing HP and such. So
yeah.
From the sound of it, you have to actually, throughout the level, maybe it might take you a couple times for you to figure it out, but you have to strategize as to how to cut the grass, where to cut the grass, and create the perfect path so that you can complete the level in time.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it is, I would say it's probably a little bit more of a puzzler than it is an action game, but the nice thing is that you've kind of got that action pacing that you're really being pushed to keep moving and keep doing something. The 3D is really nice, and I really like the 3D in the game. It's a little bit like, you know, the Zelda on 3DS, the one that was the sequel to
Link Between Worlds.
The SNES one. Yeah. So it's kind of got that similar, it's not the same art style, but it's got that similar kind of just slightly into the screen, a camera slightly above, sort of isometric feel to it. And I think it looks really nice. It's a very simple but very effective effect. And it's also quite nice the way you've got some of the artwork is in 3D models, and the characters are using sprites as if they were, you know, from a Super Nintendo game. And I think that's a really, and the way they kind of look like bits of cardboard as they move around, I think looks really, really cool.
So I know you mentioned that you had actually bought the game in Japanese initially before you went out and tried to get the publishing rights for the Western area. So I'm curious to know, what's your personal best so far in the game's endless mode?
Oh, I'll have to look at one of the test kits. I think I've got up to 99, maybe 100 if I'm lucky. Yeah, I've done quite. I'm 187, is it? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
On the Japanese one, I think. So I worked out a strategy. You kind of have to look at the bottom screen periodically to try and see the blue bit of grass that pops up. So the bottom screen is actually a map that shows all of the grass that's on the screen. And then what you want to do is obviously try and run around, not bump into any of the slimes. And then as your health starts getting low, you want to keep an eye out for where the blue bit of grass is, and then make sure you make a beeline for that. And then, obviously, one of the good tactics is to try and make a really good use of your spinning powered-up blade. Yeah, so I'm actually playing it right now. I'm up to 80 already.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to die in a second, 91. I just missed the blueberry grass. So it's really nice, and it was actually watching some people. There was a GX Expo in Sydney in February, and we had a booth there showcasing all of the games we're publishing and that are coming out soon. And I was watching people play that, and some of the people that were demoing their own games couldn't stop playing Endless Mode. So I was getting a lot of good tactics from them, which is cool. But it's actually really good fun. And it's funny, there's a couple of people that we know in the development scene here. And some of them are like, I just love cutting grass in Zelda, and this is great. I can just sit and cut grass and cut grass and cut grass and cut grass. So hopefully people will enjoy that aspect.
The guy you just mentioned, he says, I just love to cut grass. Well, maybe there's a form of zen, a form of relaxation that comes with cutting the grass. So maybe that people will actually enjoy this game for that aspect as well.
Yeah, well, you get totally in the zone, I think, and you see where you need to go, and it's just nice. You don't. All you have to focus on is just the simplicity of cutting the grass, which I realise can sound like, well, I'm just cutting the same thing over and over again. But you just kind of get locked in and definitely kind of zone out. So I'm sitting at 1,144 on the leaderboards at the moment, so that's not that amazing. I'm not sure what's number one. Oh, wow, 903. Jeez, okay.
Oh, wow.
I've got a long way to go. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, is your score like the best in the office so far, or does someone else lay claim to that?
No, I think I'm the best in the office. Bruce doesn't have the patience. I'll see if I can get him to try and set a high score. In fact, that might be a good thing for him to tweet out his high score is. Yeah, I'll see if I'll put some pressure on him.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Now, throughout the game, too, you get to keep track of all the plants you discover in your Green Thumb Almanac. So, does that mean there's a slight bit of an educational value to playing The Legend of Kusakari?
Only educational in as much as the plants have got really stupid names and really stupid meanings and things. I'm sure there's a poop plant or something like that. There's one that smells of farts, I think. But we've kind of described it a little bit more nicely than that. Do not go around thinking, trying to find these plants in the real world, because they are made up.
So, players, listen to those tips from Nick regarding both endless mode and not searching for those plants in real life. So, my final question for you, Nick, is why should gamers everywhere play The Legend of Kusakari?
Well, that's a good one. Well, I think if you like puzzle and action games, I think you'll have a blast. I think it's a really cool, quick, and simple game just to, if you're on the bus or on the train, you can pop it open and have a quick level. You can also play the endless mode whenever you've got time. And the great thing is that the leaderboards is a separate option, so it saves your high score, and then whenever you're next in kind of Wi-Fi range, you can just upload your high score to the high score tables and get the latest data. And there's also 50 main levels to the story, so there's quite a lot of levels to play there, and they do get crazy hard as they get further on. And then once you complete the main story, there's another 10 just to make you really suicidal. they're just insanely hard at the end. It's a really good value for money. I think we're selling it at $4.99 US. And I think just being able to sit on the bus or the train, as I say, or just whenever you've got a free minute, and have fun in a couple of levels. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's got that really good, quirky Japanese sense of humor. Yeah, so I hope a lot of people check it out and enjoy it.
So that is The Legend of Kusakari, available on August 25th on the Nintendo 3DS, being published by Australia's own New and developed by Liberage. Nick, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders Erased. Where can more people find information about No and The Legend of Kusakari?
Well, you can check out our website, which is no.com, which is spelled NNNOO.com. You can also find us on Twitter at _no, so that's _NNNOO. And we're also on Facebook, so you go facebook.com/no, which is also NNNOO.
Nick, thank you once again for being on the show. Best of luck on Legend of Kusakari, and I hope that it does lead towards more publishing from your end regarding quirky Japanese titles.
Yeah, that would be great. We're really excited. We'd really like to do that. And I think there's some really amazing games that Japan as a whole comes out with. And it'd be a shame for them just to stay in Japanese stores and not make it over here. So if there are any Japanese listening who would like to help us or get in touch, please do.
And I really hope so as well. Thank you once again, and best of luck on the release of this and all future titles under No.
Thanks, Evan.
Not a problem.
Coming up, we've got a band from Milan, Italy, that calls themselves Novanta. They just released a new album called Hello, We're Not Your Enemies. And this song from that record is about a man who wants to be a god and rid the world of its evils. It's called Guafos.
Potrei fare
2014 EP My Gummy No Cerebago, that was Peppermint with Haru Deshita. This band is fronted by Wakina, who was originally the lead singer for the ska group Midnight Pumpkin. Gamescom happened this past week, and no news surprised anyone more than the not-so-fine folks at Konami revealing a new Metal Gear game. The first without Hideo Kojima's involvement since their very messy breakup, Metal Gear Survive will take place after the events of Ground Zeroes. Big Boss and Mila escape via helicopter, with some of the Mother Base staff left alive and stranded on the island. That's when a wormhole mysteriously opens up and sucks up the survivors and parts of the base into it. When the survivors come to, they must band together to outlast the enemies that engulf their new surroundings. Now, at first, the game sounds fairly decent on paper. However, for those who actually watched the trailer and saw what to expect, the Metal Gear world seems to have gone the way of Resident Evil, and not the good ones. We're talking the 5th and 6th chapters, but odds are, I'm already imagining the quality being on the same level as the recent Umbrella Corps game, which was just fucking terrible. And considering it's a co-op game, I'm willing to bet that the amount of stealth, which is what made Metal Gear, has been dwindled down exponentially. You know, there's a part of me that wants to believe that Konami is trying to get things right again. But at the same time, the part that's yelling in my ear constantly knows that they just don't care about the fans or what this series means to them. To them, it's all about the money, which is why they have put more focus on the realm of gambling and pachinko machines. And by the way, I've played pachinko at a hot springs in Niigata 9 years ago. I don't fucking get its appeal. It's loud, annoying, and confusing as hell to play. That's why I believe it's time for Konami to just sell its assets and call it a day for the gaming realm, or just maybe try its hand at a new IP instead of fucking up the franchises that helped put them on the map. But I know that's not ever going to happen, because that would require a little something called effort, which, last I checked, is currently standing at level 0 in Konami stats. So, for the time being, gamers are going to be forced to watch as Konami drops its trousers and forces itself upon our beloved game franchises while they laugh diabolically at the sound of Solid Snake and Simon Belmont weeping in both emotional and physical pain. Yeah, try getting that image out of your head if that's even possible. I do want to point out, by the way, that this episode was recorded on Friday, before game critic Jim Sterling's recent Jimquisition video, and odds are, he'll probably say a lot regarding this in his Fuck Konami News Corner. So, I just want to make a note of this, just in case anyone thinks I might have copied his opinion. But, I mean, it's not that tough to hate on Konami after what they did to Kojima, Silent Hills, and Castlevania. Hell, I'm actually still pissed at their treatment of Jimmy Johnson's Anything with an Engine, which was a better kart racing game than the last few Mario Kart titles, but got practically zero promotion. So yeah, Konami's done some shit things for years. No big surprise, but it's hard to not talk about it when you're forced to watch them shit all over their legacy. For now, until we see more information about Metal Gear Survive, let's just calm down a bit and get back into some more music. Here's a song from The Yellow Monkey, who this year reformed after a 12-year hiatus. From their 2000 release, 8, this is Seinaru Unito Sunshine.
Ano hi ni sasana. Thank you.
visiting the Italian landscape that was Stella Diana with Aphrodia from this year's Nitocris record. The album, named after the Egyptian queen and last pharaoh of the Sixth Dynasty, takes into consideration the theme of being beautiful to the people who don't realize your own existence. It's a little weird, but at the same time, kind of romantic if you think about it. I don't know about you, but I simply hate it when I get a game and I discover that I don't have the right means of playing it. This is very evident when it comes to certain driving games, especially the more realistic ones. Many years ago, I got Gran Turismo 5 as a Christmas gift, but I found that I couldn't play it properly with a regular controller. Like, it was trying to force you into buying one of those $200 wheel peripherals. So, the game winds up collecting dust because I can't play it properly. Same thing happened with Drive Club, which I wound up deleting the free PlayStation Plus version of after playing just one race of it. Unless you got the pricey controller, you ain't gonna have a good time with it. I bring this up because this exact same thing happened with me in regards to Codemasters F1 2016, the latest in its popular series. Now, Codemasters knows how to make a great racing game. I love Dirt and Grid, especially how visually stunning those two franchises are. Same with this game. I'll bet the human characters still look like they're stuck in a last-gen battle. But with F1 2016, as soon as the race begins, my car somehow becomes a magnet for walls. Like, I can't seem to make sharp turns properly, and every time the competitors behind me wind up sideswiping me and knocking a wheel or two off my build. And this is in practice mode. This isn't actually a race that's happening. This is in a practice mode. I even tried a race just to see how I'd fare, and roughly 15 seconds into it, I was already in last place and knocked off the track. I really hate to say it, but I suck at F1 2016. Seriously, I may have to pop onto Twitch sometime soon so I can prove to you guys that I'm not bullshitting. Now, I give a lot of love to the team at Deep Silver and Tinsley PR for sending me the game to review. But unless I find myself a good wheel peripheral, I think I'm gonna be forced to pull into a pit stop and wait for this crazy race to finish waving that chicken flag of theirs. And I hate when that happens, because it feels like I'm betraying a publisher and developer who's entrusted me to give my opinion on the game. But, you know, if game journalists were pros at every title they go hands-on with, we'd be the ones raking in the big bucks at game competitions all over the world. Think about that for a moment while we return to this week's playlist. Here's a recent B-side from Brian the Sun, whose music was heard in last season's My Hero Academia and this season's Sweetness and Lightning. From their Hero single, this is Sunday.
Koro yowatte ku 海に沈んでく。いろんな感情が重なって今の僕を作ってる。そんなことは分かってはいるけど、何が良くて何がダメで僕はどうすればいいの。悩みながら前を向けばそこに見える景色。変わる変わる変わる世界、君にとっても僕にとっても現実だって。腕を張って笑えるように歩いてゆくんだ。たとえ世界闇に包まれても君が笑う。
loud and unapologetic, that was Poly 6 with Fire Bison from 2009's Absolute Poly 6 album. This past March, the band that was dubbed the Devo of our generation by Devo themselves released a new record called What's This? So be sure to give that one a listen as well. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei for her Nazo Nazo Nyango segment, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, on Anime Amino, J-Pop Amino, and Video Games Amino at kingbabyduckesh, and on Twitch, on twitch.tv/ommysteryinc. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbassbrigade and on facebook.com/landofesh. And also don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, and Nerd Crave. Before we fully wrap things up, I want to give a very special shout out to the folks over at Shameless Promotion PR, especially Miss Shauna McLarnon. For the past couple months, Shauna and her team have been sending me emails about the bands they represent, but because all my focus was placed on prepping for E3 and our Top 100 album series, I didn't have any time to check them out. But now that I do, I'm discovering a whole new world of talented musicians from across the globe. Hell, you just heard on this show two bands from Italy. We've never played Italian bands before until this episode. We've had French punk via Second Sex, German metal via Rammstein, Polish rock in the form of Republika, and, of course, the hundreds of Japanese artists you've heard since day one of our show over a decade ago. But we've never had a band from Europe's boot. Odds are Italy probably hates that nickname. But we had two artists from Italy just today. And that's awesome, because music is awesome, no matter the language. The motif of No Borders, No Race. Pure and simple. So yes, thank you, Shameless Promotion PR and Shauna McLarnon, for sending us some very cool and talented people. Now, incidentally, Shauna is also the vocalist for the Canadian-Ukrainian dream pop band Umagma, whom you can check out on their Bandcamp page, and I highly recommend their recent Anti-Gravity record. Some pretty cool songs on there. Anyways, we're going to end today's episode with one final track that Shameless Promotion sent down, and it comes from a band that's based out of Barnum, Colorado, called A Shoreline Dream. This year marks their 10th anniversary, as they're prepping to hopefully dive into the realm of the future yesterday with their very first vinyl release. This is their latest single, Whirlwind. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.